Let's watch Phone Booth again.
I fucking would watch Phone Booth again. I'd be all over that shit. Are you kidding me? Fuck yeah. The reverse cellular.
Yeah, the reverse cellular. Let's do a double feature of Phone Booth and cellular.
Well, I think you kind of almost have to do cellular first, because first you need to see the boy, and then you need to see the man.
Yes, that's true. That is true. It would actually be really great if Phone Booth was a sequel to Cellular. It was just him being like, thank God I'm done with that cellular business.
I've got you now.
And he's like, oh, no.
No, I'm sorry.
It's like the first one, but not quite.
What if he's like, ever since my experiences with cell phones, I now only do landlines.
Yeah. I'll be very safe if I only do landlines. So then it's someone's like, I'll shoot you if you leave the phone booth. He's like, no.
It's the last phone booth in the city.
He's like, no, except from at the end of the movie. He's like, if anyone needs me, email me.
Yes. The third movie, email.
Like, no. Like, I thought it was a Nigerian prince. Yeah.
The morning. Welcome to Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends watch a bad movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it, all while enjoying a themed cocktail. I am your host for this episode, Brendan Fairy Batman Vocal Fry Drischler.
I am Chris. Artemis loved Ireland. Ravel.
And I am Lee, you spy or you die, Delahanty.
Wow, what a great great advice.
Yeah.
You spy or you die.
I can't count the number of times I've heard it.
When it comes to the Game of Thrones, you spy or you die.
Chaos is a ladder, you spy.
You spy or you die. It's actually kind of weirdly apt that we were talking about problematic faves, because I feel like one of the characters in this movie is a very problematic character who had his edges completely sanded off for the movie itself. So interesting choice that we went with that for our mini last episode.
Yeah.
The movie is Artemis Fowl from 2020, directed by Kenny Branagh, starring Laura McDonald, Judi Dench, Josh Gad, Colin Farrell, Ferdia Shaw, Nonso Anozie, I hope I'm saying that right, Tamara Smart. Everyone beyond that is kind of just like a fairly minor character. So that's the movie that we're doing, Kenneth Branagh's adaptation of Artemis Fowl, which was supposed to be released in theaters, and then a plague happened and it got dumped on Disney Plus, which frankly is probably where it should have been.
I think honestly it probably would have been more embarrassing had it been released
in theaters. I agree. I think if this was released in theaters, people would have thrown things at the screen, burned theaters to the ground.
I think it definitely would have been more of an undeniable bomb.
Yes, unquestionably.
We are aware it's a bomb, but I think it would have been a much more public bomb.
Yes, I think Ireland would have declared war on the United States they should have.
Dare ye?
Yes.
How dare ye?
And that's the old Irish bro,
yes,
right?
Yes. Of course, to make this movie sort of go down, we had to have a cocktail for it. The cocktail that we made is called The Ritual, a reference to something that is not in the movie. It is 1.5 ounces of whiskey, sparkling yuzu, rhubarb bitters, and lime. You gently mix whiskey and sparkling yuzu in a glass with ice. Basically, you just pour the whiskey and then top it with some sparkling yuzu. We used small sort of mason jar glasses, so, you know, that amount of yuzu. Add a couple dashes of bitters and a squeeze of lime, and then garnish with a lime wedge and serve it up. What did you guys think of The Ritual?
I thought it was really delicious and refreshing, very summery.
Mm-hmm.
The yuzu, we've used it several times in the past, but it really popped in this one. It was really nice.
Love the yuzu. I'm glad, kindly, that you had to order like 30 gallons of yuzu.
Because
I think we could definitely go back to that well at some point in the future.
At least
it came in some sort of like space ready container.
Right. Yeah. Basically, you could take this on an airplane and it would be perfectly fine at this point.
You could launch it into orbit and it would be safe to drink up there.
At the very least, you know, remember when we just had that bottle of blue curacao sitting around and no one really wanted it? At least having a lot of yuzu, that's something you want to consume. Yeah. That's something you want to use.
Never, exactly.
Never make me buy blue curacao.
No, blue curacao and I think Midori is the old one that we will never, ever, ever buy again. If we need something green, we will do anything in our power to do anything but.
Futai.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be.
No. Midori is just, I'm sorry, Japan. You messed up on that one. Yeah.
my one regret is that it just was like pre-coffee for me, pre-everything. And I just, the premise of drinking a whiskey lemon drink, I was like, I can't.
It was tough.
So I had a couple sips and it tasted all right. and I liked it, but I was like, I can't.
Yeah, we have been switching to more like early afternoon, yeah, sort of like late morning records.
Yeah.
So it does kind of like fuck with you a little bit.
And
to like
normally in the past, if I've already had my coffee and a small breakfast, I'm ready to at least experience alcohol. But it was just
right.
Like, I can't. There's like a sort of idiosyncrasy I have where I just have like an order of operations, mm-hmm, with food, and I'm just like, I can't start the day.
Right, you got to PEMDAS your,
yeah,
meals.
Yeah, PEMDAS. So it was like all
right
after
but
that.
You're right, but like
it
not
tasted,
the same.
The first few sips were good.
And yeah. And like I said, I do like that sparkling yuzu, so it is a blessing in disguise that there is so much of it that we have to work our way through.
Yeah.
So maybe like the episode after next, we'll be back on our yuzu bent. It's some good shit,
and then
though.
You'll never stop us, and
yep,
it's going to be yuzu everything.
Yeah,
yuzu
fuck you
special,
all.
Yuzu,
yuzu
sparkler.
Yuzu.
Yeah, the you do
so
do
well.
So well.
It was a race to that joke.
Yes, it was.
Truly.
I was ready.
You were on the starting block. You're in
position. I jumped the pistol.
Well, having covered the cocktail lead, will you be our own Mulch Duggums, and will you exposit what the fuck is supposed to be happening?
You need to go to jail.
I will lose my voice.
Yes. That's
so
okay. Don't strain yourself.
All right, here we go. This is what the movie's about.
This
Artemis
is what the
Fowl,
about.
The movie. On the coast of Ireland, a media frenzy descends on Fowl Manor.
Wait, does this take place in Ireland?
He beats me.
Huh.
Yeah, I hear Artemis loves Ireland.
Does he?
Yeah.
Where a stolen collection of world-famous relics is linked to wealthy businessman Artemis Fowl. The first.
Yes,
sorry,
I was going
to
say, there is an inherent confusing aspect
trying
here.
Trying to do without my glasses.
Yes, because there are two Artemis Fowls. Artemis Fowl,
uh-huh,
Jr. the second.
Well, it's Artemis Fowl in the next line, so it's the first, and I just thought it was
Artemis
the,
Fowl.
I?
Yes.
All right. Arrested at the manor, Mulch Diggums is interrogated by British intelligence and claims that his employer has stolen the Aculos. Offering to prove the existence of magic, Diggums tells the story of Artemis Fowl Jr. 3 days earlier, Artemis Jr., a 12-year-old genius, lives at Fowl Manor with his widowed father, Artemis Sr., who goes missing from his boat, accused of the theft of several priceless artifacts found aboard. Artemis Jr. receives a call from a hooded figure. Holding his father captive, the hooded figure gives Artemis 3 days to recover the Aculos, which Artemis Sr. has stolen and hidden. Domovoy Dom Butler, Artemis's bodyguard, shows him a hidden library where generations of fowls have cataloged proof of the existence of magical creatures. Deep underground, inside the Earth's core, is the Haven City, home to a civilization of fairies. Mulch, an oversized dwarf thief, encounters lower elements police reconnaissance, parentheses leprechaun,
oh my God,
officer Holly Short, as he is taken to prison. Commander Julius, is it Julius Root?
So Root is a gender swapped character in this movie.
I know.
In the book, yeah. So I guess
Julius
they
is...
never say their first name is Julius, but sure, let's say
yeah.
that.
Commander...
You think it could be Julia, but here we are.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't mind it as a name for a lady. Why not? They're fairies. What do they care for, a dumb human?
That's what it says.
That's
here,
true.
Anyway.
Bullshit.
Commander Julius Root dispatches the leprechaun force to search for the Aculos, the fairy's greatest resource, which makes anyone teleport through worlds across universe.
Sure.
And biggest source of heat and light energy to the fairies. Now that sentence
okay.
doesn't check out to me.
I was there's a lot of inferences, and that is also a very badly written sentence.
Doesn't check out. Grammatically,
yeah.
doesn't check out narratively.
Yeah.
Foley, Leprechaun's centaur technical advisor, discovers an unauthorized creature has reached the surface. Holly is sent to investigate, despite the fact that her father, Beechwood Short, stole the Aculos and was killed. In Martina Franca, Italy, Holly intervenes.
That's the accent, right?
Yeah.
The Italian accent.
Italy.
Oi, we Italy then.
Holly intervenes as a rogue troll attacks a human wedding party. Using a time freeze, Leprechaun subdues the troll and wipes the human's memories. Dom's 12-year-old niece, Juliet, arrives at the manor. From his father's journal, Artemis learns that Beechwood had brought the Aculos to Artemis Sr. to keep it from the hooded figure revealed to be Opal Cowboy.
Oh boy.
A powerful fairy warlord and once a ruthless dictator of Haven City, who is now planning to wipe
I don't
out...
remember that being mentioned either, but
None
okay.
of that sounds right, yeah. Also, it sounds like a Russian sort of like mobster character.
It does.
Opal Cowboy. who is now planning to wipe out humankind and establish fairy rule upon all of the worlds. Artemis sends Dom to stake out the Hill of Tara. Holly, determined to clear her father's name, disobeys orders and flies to the Hill of Tara, where she finds Beechwood's ID tag, but is captured by Dom and imprisoned inside the manor. Roots and an army of leprechaun officers seal Foul Manor in a time freeze, but Artemis and Dom fight them off using Holly's equipment. Artemis demands the Oculos in exchange for Holly's release, forbidding fairies to enter his home while he is alive. Bound by fairy rules, Root retrieves Mulch from prison, offering him a reduced sentence to infiltrate Foul Manor. Mulch tunnels inside and breaks into Artemis Sr.'s...
How would you say that tunneling looks, Lee? Would you describe it as nightmarish?
I would describe it as, if... what's his name? Was the director that does body horror shit?
Or Cronenberg.
Cronenberg, yeah. If Cronenberg did Looney Tunes. Right?
Yes. I can see that. Very much. He, unhinges his jaw, yes. Pulls it out, dives into the ground. His pants slip down, so you can see his boxers, but dirt still flies out through his boxers or above his boxers or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely an implication that it's going through.
Right, he is devouring dirt very quickly and passing it through, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
right out his butt.
Yeah, if that's something you've ever wanted to see Josh Gad do, then boy, are you in for a treat.
Yeah. Well, he tunnels inside and breaks into Artemis Sr.'s safe, finding the Oculus, while Artemis frees Holly and asks for her help. Lieutenant Briar Cudgeon, a spy for Cowboy, seizes command of Leprechaun and releases the captured troll into the house, jamming all magic inside. Mulch swallows the Oculos as Artemis, Holly, Juliet, and Dom evade the troll, which is later killed by Dom. After killing it, Dom is mortally wounded. Against orders, Holly's fellow officers unblock her magic and she revives Dom. Mulch and the Leprechaun army escape as the time freeze collapses. Left with the Oculos, Artemis refuses to give it to Cowboy, and Holly agrees to use it to rescue Artemis's father. As Cowboy attempts to kill Artemis Sr., Holly summons him to Foul Manor. Artemis Sr. tells Holly that her father gave his life to protect the Oculos, giving her a list of Cowboy's accomplices. Holly returns the Oculos to Haven City, where Root, back in command, directs her to investigate every name on the list. Artemis calls Cowboy and promises that after destroying her associates, he will come after her and restore the balance of the universe. Sure. Mulch's interrogator offers him freedom in exchange for help capturing Artemis Sr., but Mulch reveals that Artemis arranged his arrest to prove the incident to the authorities and confirms the existence of magic on camera. As the interrogator calls for backup, the Fowl's helicopter rescues Mulch, and joined by Holly, they fly off for their next mission to hunt down Cowboy's associates.
Across the River Thames.
Across the River Thames.
The ocean sure size looks
like,
River Thames.
It sure looks like the ocean.
The English Channel.
Yeah, yes, right. All right, thank you, Lee, very much for attempting to clarify this story in so much as anyone can.
There was miles of water.
Yeah, this is, despite the Chiron saying, MI6, prisoner interrogation chambers, River Thames, this is fucking the ocean. Let's not, dick around here.
Yeah, there's no land in
sight. Yeah. The Thames is not quite that big. Can you just give us a couple, actors and characters just to say, who played who?
Ferdia Shaw is Artemis Fowl.
It's probably not going to matter because we don't know who he is.
Laura McDonnell is Holly Short. Josh Gad is Mulch Diggums. Tamara Smart is Juliet Butler. I don't know how to say this name. Am I making it? Nanzoi Anozi?
I didn't either, so I apologize. We probably got it wrong.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Apologize if I mispronounced that. And then, you got Colin Farrell as Artemis Fowl 1, and obviously Judi Dench.
Right. I think that's pretty much about
it. Yeah, there's other people, but we don't care.
They don't really matter too much. All right, so anyway, that's Artemis Fowl. Now, as we talked about briefly in the last episode, Artemis Fowl, of course, is a series of books geared probably toward, I would say, middle readers. I don't think it's quite YA. It's probably, a little below YA, but not quite, not quite, grade 5. So we'll say, 6, 7, 8.
And I think there's some choices that kind of set it apart a little. The idea that, dwarves are, earthworms. Or just even the idea of this small child is a criminal genius that kind of pulls off a diehard style
heist yeah.
/ hostage taking situation. So, it's definitely starting from a more a grittier place.
Right. Yeah. So it's sort of in that kind of sweet spot right there. It's a series of, I want to say 9 books or something, of which I have read the first one. And maybe when I was looking at it, I started to think maybe I've read the second one too, but you guys have not read either of them, right? Okay, cool. So I would say if you were to compare the book as much as I remember it and as much as I have looked at it upon doing some basic research to the movie, I would say that if you could distill the plot of the movie into 2 sentences, it would sound like the book. Child genius kidnaps fairy in exchange for ransom. Yes, they're very similar. If you go anywhere beyond that, that's where things start to get a little bit tricky. The blurb that I had mentioned in the last episode also was Die Hard with Fairies as the concept for the book, that the book was sort of being sold on, which is like a grabbing concept. Yeah, like that's bad, you yeah. say that and I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm interested. Tell me a little bit more about this. This is a movie adaptation of this book has been in like development hell for like forever, basically, since the books came out. The books were published by Miramax, by their book publishing arm. So like Miramax,
they had one.
Oh yes, they had everything at one point. They had it all, and then look what happened. They were monsters. Yeah. So they had the rights to this movie. And then basically starting back in 2001, they were sort of like, oh, let's explore making this into a movie. And this is a movie that has been, as I said, in production hell in some capacity ever since then, pretty much, where it's been kicked around from director to director. There are different people who've been attached to it. At one point, Saoirse Ronan was in talks, I think, to play Holly Short like many years ago, which feels like
when she was a young lass.
Yeah, which feels like a pretty sensible, like, yeah, you'd probably go to her for something yeah. like this. And then eventually it gets dumped on Kenneth Branagh. Kenneth Branagh, of course, has a relationship with Disney. Disney got the rights to it from Miramax because at one point there was some like connection between the two companies. So Disney has the rights to this book, doesn't really know what to do with it except that they think that a movie should be made. Kenneth Branagh, coincidentally, has just read the book because like one of his nephews said like, oh, it was really great. And Kenneth Branagh's like, yes, I agree. This is a fun book. And Disney was like, do you want to make this? And he was like, sure, I'll make this. Kenneth Branagh, of course, as we know, has sort of been in bed with Disney for a little bit at this point. He yeah. did the live action Cinderella. They mm-hmm. since they bought Fox, they have been doing the Poirot. Yes. Poirot. So like the Poirot,
which we'll be doing
yet another one of later this year. It sort of makes sense that perhaps Kenneth Branagh, being Irish, right? He's Irish, I'm pretty sure. So, yes.
Yeah. So Belfast was meant to be autobiographical.
Yes, that's right. It was. It sort of makes sense that like maybe you throw this at Kenneth Branagh and be like, what can you do with this sort of thing?
I will say, though, as a director, this is a bit of a step outside. Not that that's a bad thing, that it is a step outside of what you would expect.
Well, it's a little more like when you look at something like Thor and remember that he did the first Thor, right? Like, yeah. obviously, this is geared more toward a younger audience, but it does have more of the vibe of what are we doing here exactly?
Yeah, for real.
And like Thor, I think at least sort of feels kind of like the initial idea was that Paramount, whoever was like had the deal with Marvel at the time, was like, oh, Thor feels like he's like a bigger than life sort of like Shakespearean type character. Yeah. So maybe Kenneth Branagh should make this movie, and that would make sense.
And then the movies didn't get good until they switched to Taika Waititi.
Right, yes. And then we were like, oh, Thor can't be this character anymore.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's sort of how Kenneth Branagh got in bed with this whole thing. As we sort of talked about when we were watching this is a movie that feels like there have been many, 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 many reshoots involved. So there is a framing device with Josh Gad, which Lee, you alluded to when you were reading the synopsis of it, where periodically we will cut to Josh Gad in black and white in the Thames, and he'll be like, this is what was actually happening during all
like
this.
These little like fishing shacks.
I mean, they look like
stilts.
These like dilapidated, like the things that should like fall into the ocean if like a gentle wave were to sort of brush them.
But they're like metal. They're, I mean, they look like, they almost look like, I mean, if they weren't in the water, they'd be like water, towers.
Yeah. No, they do. Yeah.
They have like, it's like a pole and then it sort of,
it gets bigger at the top.
Like a vessel of some kind.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah. Who the fuck knows?
Right.
What that's gonna look like.
Yeah. I can't tell you what they actually are or what they're doing here, but they're ostensibly in the Thames. And we cut back to Josh Gad, who will periodically provide clarification for what people are thinking or what they are doing, why he knows these things. Why at various points is he aware of what characters are thinking? I don't know. Did he sit down with everyone after the heist and was like, hey, like, so tell me, what was your take on all of this while this was happening? I couldn't say.
It just blows my mind that, because the framing device contains so much necessary context and exposition, it's so wild to me that that was a reshoot.
I mean, I think there's a reason why this movie is only like 90-some minutes long, and I have to imagine it's because a lot got cut from it at some point. And so the idea is just that, well, Josh Gad can patch over all manner of sins with his heavenly
voice.
Yes, with his exposition. So things that were done in reshoots for this movie. I was doing a deep dig onto this when I was trying to figure out sort of what the deal is. When I watched this the first time, I was just sort of like, well, this is just kind of like dumb, right?
Did you do a deep dig-um?
Yes, I did a deep dig-ums on this movie. Yes. Do you think he's related to the,
Is he related to Ash Ketchum?
I was going to say, is he related to the Corn Pops frog who's always going, I dig-um?
Do you think he's related to Dig Dug?
And Ash Ketchum.
And Ash Ketchum. One digs him, one catches him.
And yeah, is Dig Dug his little...
Dig Dug is
Do you think it turns out that Dig Dug was Mulch Diggums this entire time?
Yeah. It's like Dig Dug is to Mulch Diggums as Scrappy Doo is to Scrappy Doo.
So the things that were added in reshoots, from the best I can tell, while I was doing this deep dig into this kind of thing. So the concept of the Aculus. You may remember the Aculus is sort of the MacGuffin of this entire movie. Not there originally. The Josh Gad framing device. Not there originally. The scene with the psychiatrist in the beginning. You remember when he's talking to, like, the school psychiatrist?
Yeah.
And the school psychiatrist is like, so your mom's dead. What of that?
And, like, the whole vibe of the scene is like, hey, what if this kid had just, like, sunglasses that just came down on his face and he was like, fuck therapy, yes. Not for me!
Yeah. The basically alterations of Artemis' character and the addition of Colin Farrell as Artemis Sr., someone who was announced very late in casting. Shooting had begun without an actor playing this part, which leads people to assume that this fellow was not in the story originally. Now, it might interest you to know, perhaps, that this character is not in the book, as it were, originally. His father has been missing since the time of the first book, missing and presumed dead. His mother is alive. His mother is alive and mentally unwell because the father has gone missing. It sort of caused her to have a mental breakdown. And she's basically, like, living in one room in their mansion and just never comes out and never can deal with anything.
Do you think there was a version of the movie where they still had that?
I think there was, because someone is cast as the mother. If you look on IMDb, the mother was cast. I think
that.
Also, if you look at the end of the movie when Artemis is running around shouting dad, dad in the mansion, you don't see his mouth move anytime he says dad. You see him from the back of his head. I think he was running around shouting mom, mom every time he was running around. This movie has a lot of fun with ADR trying to make sense of things that were cut or changed as it went on.
Frankenstein.
Yes, aggressively. So this is the sort of early version of the movie, as it were. Artemis Sr. used to travel to fairy-related locations for unknown reasons, but went missing. His mother, Angeline, is in a deteriorating mental state, partially due to trauma. Artemis Jr. receives a message from his father's kidnapper demanding a ransom of fairy gold. Artemis uses postcards from his father in conjunction with stones near Foul Manor to work out that fairies are involved. He visits Ho Chi Minh, which is the deleted scene that you can see on YouTube that we watched that was also on Disney Plus briefly, back before this movie got taken off of Disney Plus as an effort to get a tax break, where he meets a fairy played by Hong Chao, who may be Opal Cowboy, the fairy who kidnapped Artemis Sr. in the final movie, because apparently she was credited as playing Opal and is possibly the voice performer as well. This is really not at all clear.
Who knows?
Yeah. And trades an antidote to the holy water that he tricked her into drinking for a fairy book. Artemis translates the fairy book using carvings on the stones, finding everything about them. He discovers that the ancient oak next to Foul Manor Estate is related to the fairies, and he and Butler probe the earth beneath it. Holly always had a subplot about wanting to clear her father's name for some reason, which is not in the book. Whenever she leaves the troll fight to go to the tree, which is when they kidnap her, originally the idea was that she was doing this as part of a fairy ritual, which is something that exists in the books where their magic gets gradually depleted as they use it, and they have to basically recharge by, like, it's like all very specific, and I'm going to bring this up as quick as possible. Like, you have to find an acorn and plant it in a very specific location, and it's one of those things that, like, makes sense in the books. They're spending more time on it, and it's also this sort of thing where in the books, Artemis and Butler are aware of this, and they, like, stake out many locations, and this is a much longer process, whereas in the movie, it's just kind of like, should we watch this tree for a while? Like, oh, hey, there she is. Great, let's go nab her. So in the book, she was planting an acorn, and that's when they nab her. It wasn't this whole thing about, like, I found my father's ID tags by the tree for some reason. Holly is also stuck in a prison transport job instead of recon, which is why she was there for the troll thing in the first case.
Yeah.
Through unknown means, Butler and Artemis capture her and hold her captive. The Lep learns of the capture and lays siege to Foul Manor. Artemis negotiates with Root, where he mentions a ransom of fairy gold, which is, in the movie, he's talking about the Aculus. And there is a line of dialogue in the movie that is very weird because it was probably done in post, where he says something like, I want the Aculus, you know, it's probably in a pot at the end of the rainbow or something, which makes a whole lot more sense if you think originally he was saying, I want gold, which is probably in a pot at the end of the rainbow, which is the thing we typically associate with gold, not so much with, like, a magic MacGuffin that no one knows anything about.
Yeah.
As they're talking about that, Root, Judy Dench's character, also brings up the concept of a biobomb, which is something in the book. They will bomb the location, it kills all organic life, and they're basically saying, like, look, if you don't, like, play nice with us, like, we could do this to you, so, like, maybe be a little cooperative with us. When they send Mulch in, he finds something hidden, but instead of being the Aculus, it is Artemis's copy of the book. Artemis negotiates with Holly, they bond over their daddy issues, and they decide to work together. At some point, for unknown reason, Mulch also decides to work with them. They send in the troll. During the fight, Butler gets injured, Holly heals him. As a result of the failed troll attack, the fairies are just like, fuck it, fine, it didn't work, deliver it, just like, give him the gold, it's fine, give him the gold. And after releasing Holly, Artemis has Butler and Juliet drink tranquilizers to escape the biobomb. This is something that's explained more in the book, where, again, it makes more sense. But what I'm going to basically say is they basically find out that if they are asleep, the biobomb will not affect them. There is a logic to it beyond what I'm saying to you. Okay. So just assume it makes sense. The specifics after this are vague, but most likely Artemis and Holly will work together to rescue Artemis's father and cure his mother. Supposedly, Artemis yelling for his father while running around the house is ADR, so he's probably calling for his mother instead. At some point, someone or multiple someone's got cold feet. I would have to assume it's probably a lot to do with the characterization of Artemis, who, again, in the books is effectively a villain. Like, in the movie, he's played as sort of like a smart, spunky little pain in the ass. So
is this what you're describing? Yes. Is this your best guess at what the movie was, or is it for sure what the movie
this,
was?
People seem fairly confident that at one point it was this.
Okay. And is this the book as well?
This is very close to the book, I would say. There are still elements to it that have been changed, but yes.
He's doing things like holding a fairy hostage, yes, blah, 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 and get asking for money because he just wants his family back.
In the book, he is doing it mostly for mercenary purposes because his father is missing and his mom is like mentally incapacitated. So it's kind of like your family is supposed to be like very rich and prestigious, but you're losing standing in the world. Your dad is gone. It turns out like people think he's shady and your mom can't do shit. So what he does in the book is he basically just wants gold for his own purposes.
I see.
And then at the end, he also mentions to Holly, like, I will give you back half of the gold if you can make my mother better again. Okay. And so like, it's kind of, he's doing it for a little bit of like an altruistic reason to help his mother, but also it is kind of like, but money is very important to me too here.
Okay.
So in the book, he's almost wholly villainous or at least an anti-hero character.
But in this movie, he was already at least mostly doing it for his family.
Right. In this movie, he is doing it because he wants his father back entirely.
Okay. So in the proto movie, mm-hmm, he was already softened from being sort of full villain to my family back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But I still have to hold a fairy hostage to do that.
Right.
Which,
yes,
to be fair, he's still doing
it. Yeah, no, he is still like, yeah, he is still doing like a pretty shitty thing. It, yeah, is one of the things that I kind of hit, like, when we were watching this again. No, this is clearly bad. You're doing clearly, yeah, like quote unquote bad things in this movie.
But I guess the one thing he doesn't do is like, you know, poison someone.
Right.
Right. So yeah, there is that whole deleted scene, yeah, where he poisons a fairy to get the book, which is, again, in the source material, which is cut out entirely from the movie. I have to assume because, like, test audiences, when they saw this, they're like, oh, little boy poisons, like, this fairy to get something from her? Like,
yeah.
I don't like that. Like, that's not good little boy behavior.
Yeah. Listen.
Yeah.
I'm gonna out myself here, but yeah, I don't think that that's, you know, he didn't kill anyone.
I agree with, yeah, you. I mean, so here's the thing. One, I agree with you. Not, I don't think, bad, in the scheme of things, it's that bad.
It's not that bad.
And two, also, I
you
think, like,
play hardball with the fairies.
Right,
sometimes.
Yes. And two, also, like, the fairies are a little bad, too. Like, at one point in the books, they do try to kill him. They drop a biobomb, yeah, on the house. So it's like, they're not all that great either. So it's sort of like, oh, you're both,
we're
kind of being shitty.
Here.
Right, yeah, you're both being sort of shitty to each other.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm okay with that. Like, as a viewer, I would be okay with someone doing, yeah, sort of
if
ostensibly bad things.
If we're in a world, we're getting a story about, like, a guy stealing stuff, and he does it, and he doesn't kill anyone doing it,
mm-hmm,
then I'm fine with that.
No, I am too. Like, I mean, that's so much of fiction, right? How much of fiction is, like, watching people steal shit from people? You know, like,
yeah,
the Ocean's movies are, like, entirely this. It's,
yeah,
just, like, stealing money. Like, that's perfectly fine.
But with style.
Right. The snag that it ends up hitting is when a large family studio wants to make a movie geared toward children, and then, like, the parents are like, this isn't very nice.
You have to sand a lot of those edges,
yeah,
off.
You do. So I think, like, that's kind of the issue that
also,
you enter
yourself.
Also,
what if, this is a good,
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, yeah,
what,
yeah,
if, like, instead of, if you wanted to soften it, but you keep that bit, what if, like, instead of, oh, I poisoned you, what if, because, like, there's that weird fairy thing where, like, fairies can't lie, but obviously mortals can.
Right.
What if he just gives her, like ghost pepper?
It's just like, I've given you poison.
I've given you poison.
She's like, I'm getting so,
yeah,
hot.
She's like, wah, like steam shooting out of her ears.
Water.
Yeah. He's like, just kidding.
Yeah,
that was a Wendy's spicy chicken sandwich.
It is going to hurt like hell, though.
Yeah,
and then at least, like, Artemis would also kind of have something to distinguish him or make him an interesting character.
Right, which is the problem with Artemis in the movie, is that Artemis in the movie is a profoundly dull character.
Yeah.
Because he has none of, like, the interesting edges that this character once had. Instead, he's just a smart little boy who doesn't like authority and loves surfing.
That in his face is just blank a lot of the time. We'll get into that in characters,
yeah,
and performances. But.
Right. So because all this should happen, you've added the Josh Gad framing device as an attempt to cover, like, anything that might not make immediate sense. And, like, it still really doesn't make sense that MI6 has captured him, because he says,
yeah,
like, I wanted you to capture me so that people would be aware of fairies. Like, why would they want people to be aware,
yeah,
of fairies?
That was the whole problem.
Right, like, the fairies 100% do not want people to be aware of them. So why is this a good plan?
Well,
and why?
I guess, like, the whole point was that they only did it to MI6, right?
I guess so, yeah. So, like, MI6 is not liable to go out and be yes. like, hey, we just found out fairies are real.
That's like telling the CIA. And
right.
The CIA is unlikely to then be like... we better tell America.
Yeah, right, right, right. Although it is kind of still just, you think you'd want no one to know, right? Like, you still don't want a government organization
I
to
guess,
be like...
but, I mean, again, I'm very fucking foggy about the end of this movie.
Oh, I am too. The end of this movie is very confusing. When you start to poke at it at all, it immediately crumbles.
But I reckon that maybe there was some sort of inevitable heat they were going to catch from the government.
Right.
And so, I don't know how or why, but if that was the case, then you would want to get out in front of it and be like... hey,
this is all real.
Yeah, yeah, make this noise go away.
Yeah,
and
we'll take care of this for you.
Yeah.
So I mean that could very well have been part of it. Frankly, I mean that could have been like a thought behind it. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where none of that comes through.
Yeah, that's extrapolation because I'm just like, what?
I just desperately want this to make some
like,
level.
Why
of sense.
Why are the press there at the end?
Yeah,
right?
And why are they, and then like why are they instantly gone as well too? Whenever they start leaving, like why are they not there during the fairy attack?
Yeah,
like there's just
at some point Artemis is like, I took care of it, and it's like, how?
Yeah, what did you do exactly? Exactly.
It's a massive hand wave that
yeah.
you took care of it. But also, I was also wondering, what was the news media actually reporting on?
Well, it's because it is so, like, and
they just kept saying...
he's stolen shit.
Yeah, but hilariously, they just kept saying, like, it's so horrifying.
Yeah.
Right, but what's horrifying?
His crimes are so shocking.
Right. And, like...
don't say anything about what he did.
Yes. Well, they say he stole, like, fairy-related objects. We determined that they're fairy-related. And, like, I can certainly get that in our 24-hour media world, you would probably send, like, a news van to this house and be like, we want to know about, like, this, like, glamorous rich crime. But it is still, like, dumb. It is still dumb. Don't get me wrong. The other thing that the movies kind of added was, like, as we were watching this, the character of Opal Cowboy, who is like this mysterious character in the dark who has no real motivations that we understand beyond. Like, I'm so confused by the fact that, like, the Acura can make fairies.
The Acura.
She can take an Acura to the above world to, like, drag her armies with her. But, like, fairies can go to the above world because we see, like, a fleet of fairies come to Artemis's house.
They have to go and disturb that Italian wedding.
Right. They can travel up in little pods. So I just don't understand, like, why she needs this device to do anything at all, first of all.
I also just think the character's anonymity gets comical at a certain point because you think what's going to happen is, oh, there's going to be an eventual face reveal.
Right.
Instead, it just feels kind of unfinished and anticlimactic. It's literally just a hood. You don't really see facial features.
Right.
There's a, like, digitally inserted beam of green light whenever they're communicating.
Right.
It doesn't actually illuminate anything.
Yeah.
All they are is a hood and a kind of voice.
A raspy post-production voice, basically.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that was kind of an attempt. That was something that was not in the original version of the script, probably, because Opal as a character is not in the first book. And so it was probably thrown in there as, like, just a way to have, like, a villain character.
And it's a hook,
work
right, for the
right.
next movie.
Yeah, that too as well.
The adventure continues,
yes.
trying to take down Opal Cowboy
Opal Cowboy. Her, please.
Sorry,
her.
All of her cold boys.
All of her cold boys. Yes. This character may or may not have been played by Hong Chau, who played the fairy in the deleted scene. It is very unclear.
At least
about
she's
all this
credited
shit.
On IMDb. She's a fairy woman in Ho Chi Minh City.
Right.
And then there's three, I've never heard of these people, but three other people who are credited as a mysterious shadowy woman.
Right, which I think speaks to how much shit and reshoots happened here.
Yeah.
Or just that they didn't even have like the same actor playing this character. It was just sort of like whoever showed up that day.
And I wasn't paying attention
them.
To it, but I bet you every time they said Opal Cowboy, it was ADR.
It wouldn't surprise me again either. Unsurprisingly, these bandages that they slapped on the movie didn't seem to work either. And this was the point where they called in Colin Farrell and were like, hey, could you be daddy?
You make everything better, Colin Farrell.
Yes.
That's why we need
you. You look so great in a suit. Will you please just stand around and look concerned with this child for a while and maybe it'll play better? And this was also the point that they added in the Aculus to replace the Ransom Fairy Gold. Like, if you look, apparently there are pictures online, like production photos of Artemis, like, with a pile of fairy gold at the end of the movie.
In the back of his Acura?
Yes, in the back of his Acura while he's wearing his Oculus headset.
Oculus Rift.
Yes, his Oculus Rift while also holding the Aculos. The Aculus is not something that exists at all ever in the books, in the prior versions of the script, anything like that. So it is kind of insane to throw in an entirely new MacGuffin into the movie after you have already filmed the movie and tweaked it, and then to just be like, but this is actually the thing that you all want, right? So it replaces the Ransom Fairy Gold. Hong Chau was either not involved or unavailable. Like, no one can understand this. And so there are, again, the three different women playing Opal Cowboy every time you see this character.
I wonder if by the time they were doing reshoots, she was already like, like in something or too famous to go back to this or something like
yeah,
that. Because she has blown up in a meaningful way since.
Yeah, no, she has. And so like, you know, good for her. Good for right. you for like dodging those whole bullets. I think there's also probably attempts to sort of make Artemis more likable. So you have things like that scene of him surfing in the beginning. And I feel that also like because you're sanding down some of his edges.
Is that where him getting sick air on a hoverboard also happening?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yes, yeah. The wildly improbable jumping on his little hoverboard.
Some tasty air.
He really does. He gets some height.
Which does not happen on hoverboards.
No, which you physically cannot do because your feet are just on top of
also,
them.
Also, they don't like, go that fast.
Right, no, that's the thing too. Like, you couldn't jump and you wouldn't stay like mounted on it
Listen,
at that
goes,
point.
That's just how cool he is, okay?
He goes uphill on it.
Yeah.
And hits a ramp and he goes, I'm like, no.
Nope.
And then he did a mad 360 Ollie grind on the stairwell.
Yeah, and Butler pops in, is like sick.
Smiling a little goofy grin the whole time.
Yes, he is smiling
a little
goofy grin.
The only time he smiles in the goddamn movie.
Yeah, otherwise he has like a mask.
A grumpy face.
Just sort of.
Yeah.
A grumpy baby face. So I have to assume also that just because like so much time was spent in making Artemis more likable, that probably like trimmed down any scenes he had with other characters where he was being a jerk. So it's kind of why like Juliet as a character like doesn't matter in this movie.
Not
like,
at all.
Like,
I
Juliet
forgot
could,
she was around.
Right. Like, Juliet at various points, like, isn't kind of there. And then she'll just, like, pop up all of a sudden, like, during a chase scene or something, like, oh, right, you. Like, she was at one point, like, standing on a, what do you call it? A lighthouse, I think, like keeping a lookout. That all of a sudden, like she's in the house again, and it's just sort of like, oh, right, like you're running around doing shit. That's
she's
right.
wherever
yeah.
she needs to be.
I thought because Holly is like a weird thing where it's like she's played by sort of a child, but she's like an 80-year-old fairy,
right.
ostensibly like an illegal
an adult. Yeah,
that they put Juliet.
Yeah.
As, like, a foil for Artemis, that he had, like, a buddy, a friend.
Right.
But then it still ends up being sort of Holly that he bonds with.
Right,
even
yeah.
though, like, they visually they're both children, but she's an adult.
Yeah.
And she punches him.
She does punch him in the face, which,
and
again...
that is child abuse.
Yeah, an adult punching a child.
I really thought he was going to return the favor later, because when he does that, like... like, now I can trust you. I thought he was then just going to follow it up by, like,
punching her
in the face.
Yeah.
It's the act two is
and
just them punching each other.
I read earlier while we were watching the movie or after the movie, like, the book summary stuff, that, like, that is the character who he, like, forges a close bond
yeah.
with. And I'm like, that's kind of weird because he's 12.
And she is an adult.
And I don't have a huge problem with, like, differing, like, you know, scales of age between species, but, like, it's still that he's 12.
Right.
Regardless of, like, anything else of their age difference, he's not an adult. So, like, what happens? How does that work?
I think it is one of the inherently weird things about putting this book into a visual medium where, like, in a book, it's like, okay, she's a fairy and I have this vision of this character.
Yeah.
And sort of, like, you don't have to think that she's really, like, a child, you know? Like, you can think that she's childlike,
yeah.
but not literally played by a child. But then when you literally have a child play this character, it's sort of like, that's
yeah.
a little strange. And also the fact that, like...
But in the book, aren't you weirded out when, as the novels go on, if you're reading all of them, that they get closer and closer?
Well, I was going to say, like, that's the weird thing, too, because Artemis presumably gets older throughout the novels, and she will presumably look the same by the end, because
yeah.
she has such a long lifespan.
If it's one of those deals where it's, like, she looks young, and then it happens all at once, and she suddenly looks like Judy Dench, all wrinkled.
Yeah.
And suddenly her voice comes
well,
from, like,
I read,
Artemis to
I read
Artemis.
Under Artemis, there's, like, a list of characters page on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That at one point he time travels so that his legal age is older than his appeared age, his physical age.
Okay.
Which also sounds weird.
Yeah,
that's a bizarre,
that sounds
I can't,
anime.
A yeah, no,
cheat.
Yeah, I can't speak to that having never read that. Maybe it plays better than it reads as like a sentence or two online. That sounds confusing and strange, and I'm not sure what to make of it.
Yeah,
is what I would say.
So anyway, I just thought that was weird. That like I thought like, oh, we have another human for him to be like a friend of his, a peer of his age.
Yeah.
But it appears to be Holly is the character that in the books is like his ongoing
right.
like partner, friend character.
And it's also strange, too, because my vague recollection is that in the books, Juliet's like a teenager who is older than Artemis. So
yeah.
like there's clearly a choice made to age her down, presumably for the reason that you said, to give Artemis someone like of his own age to kind of like bounce off of a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Yes.
But then she does so little of that. And like you said, later on, he's mostly with Holly anyway.
It's,
so like, why is this character made younger if you're not going to do anything?
How
with
nuts
it?
Is it that in the scene where Dom is like dying,
mm-hmm.
she's like not in the room.
Yeah
it's Artemis that's like Dom is
right
dying.
It, like this is his niece, like you think she should be a little sad, but like fuck, don't
she's
worry about it guys
something
it,
else.
It's why I imagine there had to have been a scene shot with that, but it got cut out. Maybe maybe a lot of Juliet is on the cutting room floor.
I mean, the thing that I almost wonder with some of this is, like, when I was thinking about, like, okay, if you were like forced at gunpoint to reshoot this movie to, like, try and make it something presentable, I feel like the obvious character to do a framing device would be Holly Short, because like, you could frame this entire thing as her giving a police report underground or something without having to go into too many weird details about Artemis, like, rescuing her at the end and all that bullshit. But, like, part of me was wondering, like, did the actor, like, age too much? Like, maybe. Was this one of those things where, like, the character now, maybe it's the same with Juliet. Like, maybe Juliet, who was a child, now looks, like, far too mature to conceivably be that same person.
I can believe that.
Yeah. So, like, I think there are points in the movie where Artemis also looks older than he did
earlier on. My question is, if you had to do, like, the problem is, I don't know what they thought was the problem in the first place. Like, you're describing a movie that they had problems with.
Right.
But, like, most of those problems seem to be fear about the perceived aspects of the character.
Yes.
Which is, like, were those real, or would it have been fine and they were just changing things unnecessarily?
That's what I can't tell how much of this was test audiences panic, which made executives panic, or if it was just executives seeing this movie and then panicking on their own, you know? But yeah. it is one of those things where it feels like this is a movie that was, like, test marketed to a bunch of different groups, and they were just taking every little bit of feedback that someone was saying, where someone would be like, oh, Artemis seems, like, a little unpleasant, and therefore I don't like that. The thing I saw, I wish I had written down, like, the account or something, but there was a YouTube video I watched about this called, just talking about, like, the editing of Artemis Fowl. And the comparison they brought up is how so many movie trailers now almost begin with, like, a 2-second trailer for the trailer. Have you noticed this?
Bizarre.
Where it's just, where it's like, this is the trailer for this movie. It's starting in 2 seconds. Watch it.
It's so unnecessary. Just go to the trailer.
Here's the thing. Like, their logic was that because we have so much shit that we can watch at any given moment, if you are not sucked in within the first 2 seconds to be like, here is an interesting image from what you'll see from the trailer, you are liable to be like, don't want to see this, and scroll past it, you know? And that is the thought process. This is why, if you think about it, that's also conceivably why Artemis as a character might be someone that someone would watch 5 minutes of the beginning of the movie and be like, he's unpleasant, don't like. Which I think mostly just speaks to, again, stupidity on behalf of executives, but I think it also speaks to, like, the stupidity of people who consume media, that if you don't see something appealing within, like, a matter of minutes, you're going to be like, no, I'm done with this sort of thing. Like, it's just sort of the difference between back when you had to actually make a choice to watch a movie, because you're like, I'm going to rent this movie, I'm going to sit down and watch it, versus now, where if you're on Netflix, you fire up a movie, you can within 2 minutes be like, meh, done. Don't care for this.
We've also normalized, like, double or triple screen experiences.
Right. Yes.
So, like, that's also whittling away at the attention and attachment you might have to what you're seeing on screen.
Right. Like, so many of the problems I think from this stem partly from executives, but I think also stem from the right or wrong fear that audiences will start watching this and be like, boy, unpleasant. No, thank you.
Which I find to be a weird... that's just a weird reaction to have, just because, I don't know, like, it would have at least been something.
No, I agree with you.
The character's just sort of nothing.
Because I know we've done several adaptations of YA-style shit before. Has there ever, ever, ever been an adaptation of a YA series or something like that where they drastically alter everything about the book and it comes out and people are like, actually, good job? When has this ever
worked?
Happened? Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. And I don't think any of us will have an answer necessarily right now.
I mean, I don't know the YA, but that has to be true in some way.
I'm sure it must be somewhere, right? Because I know there are definitely, like, there are things like Jaws, which people are like, actually better than the book because it knew what you had to cut out.
I don't know if Stardust counts, but Stardust is an interesting argument. But also, didn't Neil Gaiman participate in both?
I think he might have. I don't know for 100%. So it could just be the fact that, like, he knew that this was a different, like, thing, so you have to look at it differently. Which I think is, I guess there's, well, Stardust isn't part of, like, a series, though, right?
It's
just kind of
standalone.
Yeah.
It's a standalone novel.
Yeah. I think that there are definitely times where it works for standalone shit like that, because I think, like, it's easier to sort of just look at it on its own and not have to worry about the wider repercussions of changing things like this. But I'm more curious about, like, if you take the first book in a series, and I guess I said YA, but you're right, it need not be YA, it could be anything, but, like, where you drastically change everything about it and people are still like, yes, I want to see more of this.
It's especially,
I'm gonna get back to you.
Yeah, I would love to, like, talk about this at some point. I'm sure there definitely must be. I just think it's few and far between.
I think Dune could kind of count if you squint. It doesn't make many dramatic changes, but it does make changes.
I don't think that it makes that many changes. I mean, again, I have not read the book, I've read synopses of it, but, like, I don't think I would classify that as making making drastic changes.
It's more tone and framing than anything else.
Yeah.
But you're right, just because I feel like if you're going to change that much about the first book in the series, that necessitates or suggests that there will be changes further down the line in other books to kind of bring everything together, right?
Right.
So at that point, why didn't you just create an original...
Right. And I know the answer is obviously that you want name recognition, and the studio has spent all this money acquiring this property, so they just want it to come out.
Which I get, but that crosses the line over from, well, then who is this for?
Right.
Because the people who would recognize it would be expecting the book. And if they don't get that, I don't think you're going to have a successful movie.
Right. And then also because you've made this so bland and interesting to begin with, the average audience doesn't care either.
Right.
I think there's kind of a problem with it. Again, I haven't read these books. Mm-hmm. I only know what you've told me and what I've researched a little bit myself. And I think there's kind of a problem with adapting these books, knowing that you want to make a franchise out of it and you have to start with the first book. It doesn't seem like as much of like a sort of Ocean's 11 thing where it's like, oh, the next movie is just going to be another heist.
Right.
Like, it seems like the first book is very different from all the others because the first book is like, this is who Artemis Fowl starts as. Mm-hmm. He starts as a guy who holds fairies hostage for money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, he gradually turns into somebody who's like, works more and more with fairies and develops like more of a sense of morals and like character growth arc,
right?
To the point where he's not like, where the future ones aren't like him continuing to kind of be like a thieving, hostage taking
scoundrel.
But like some sort of like a agent for hire type person who maybe does a bunch of like things that are helping other people or helping the whatever they're called, the fair people or the fair, I forget what they're called in the books, but it seems like you kind of have this weird catch 22 where it's like the first movie has to be a big hit and then people are going to want to see more of that.
Right. People want to see another heist type movie, but then it's not a heist type movie.
But like, if you just do the book, people are going to realize like, well, the next movie's not going to be like the book.
Right.
Not the first book. It's going to be like a different story. It's going to be a different arc. So it's kind of a hard... I kind of see the sort of goal here to maybe introduce the concepts earlier on of, listen, guys, he's not going to be a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We have to tell you that now.
I guess it's weird to me that they wouldn't capitalize on the idea of a villain protagonist, not a villain, but a like
anti-hero.
An anti-hero child protagonist that would at least be unique and you're at least going in a direction.
I don't think they did a good job.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
Yeah, but like I think that I think that you're like they should have made him interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
They could
not
have made him a boring story.
Right. If he's not going to be like a semi-villainous character, he has to have something to him beyond just Artemis loves Daddy.
But Artemis
wants to dance with Daddy.
Daddy wants to dance with Artemis.
The instinct to include elements of like, oh, my family is... I have no family or I want my family back. Or I have reasons for doing this beyond like, I just want money. Or good. So that starting him off as a place of like, I'm self-centered, but I'm not like evil.
Right.
I just want like things that I don't have. And maybe you kind of understand why he lacks a moral compass.
Yeah.
Because like, if there's no one there, it's...
Right. I mean, it is, I think that's kind of like the point of the books. He's like a shitty dad.
Yeah.
Like, or an absent dad and a mom who like is mentally unwell. So like, he just can't be raised effectively.
He's just like a smart kid with like no one to supervise.
Right. Like he's got like no filter. So he's just going to like use his intelligence for like all the worst things.
You could have made him like a fun sort of like little kid version of, I don't know, pick any sort of charming thief character from any fiction and just made him that. Why am I failing to find...
I mean, like, you've got your A.J. Raffles types.
But it's,
I mean, I was even thinking...
Reference.
I was just thinking even something like Loki or something, you know, like Loki is a character who starts off as a villain and then sort of becomes humanized to sort of be more of an anti-hero type character.
Yeah, he could have been like the trickstery type who gives a fairy hot sauce.
Right, yes.
And
says, like,
water.
It's poison. Like, oh no, you drank holy water, you're gonna die. And then it's like,
it's burning you.
Yeah, just kidding.
It would at least show like creativity, fun, ingenuity.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, that's the thing. I feel like you get none of that from Artemis in this movie. Like, Artemis, it feels like it's one of those Donald Trumpian four dimensional chess things where whenever something happens, he's just like, ah, yes, according to my plan. And it's just sort of like, it is?
It doesn't really match like a sort of thief, right? It matches a sort of like, I don't know, kingpin sort of like spy master thing.
Yeah.
But I think is what you want is like, again, for like in school, he's like rigged the chair to fall apart when he's in the therapy session.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of grinning the whole time.
Right.
Little shit. All the therapy session goes on. because he knows the chair's going to fall apart at some point, and he's timed it perfectly.
Yeah.
You need him to, you kind of need him to be more of, like, a little shit, smirking, smarmy kid, I think.
Yeah. And I think, like, that's, like, and I agree that that's, like, a hard needle to thread, but, like, it has been done, and it can be done.
Yeah.
You just have to, like, be willing to sort of put in the legwork to make it work. For whatever reason, either it was, like, a reshoots thing, or it was never there in the first place, like, this just not put in that legwork.
Yeah. Maybe if there was, like, a sort of, like, one part of, like, absolute little shit and, like, one part, like, Charlie Bartlett style, like, just kind of, like...
Scampiness.
Know, scampy, yeah. Just kind of, like, free-willed scamp that's, like, kind of
trying to... Oh, you.
Yeah.
Then that would have, might have worked a bit better. But, again, you get this kid who doesn't emote much.
Right. He loves Ireland, though. He loves Ireland.
Loves Ireland.
All right, so having talked about the sort of source material and production hell reshoots of this, how's that world being built? What do you guys think about the world building of this movie? I think it's kind of a fucking mess.
Yeah, it's thin, it's confusing, it's weird. I will say one thing I like. I like that they did not necessarily take an expected route for what the fairy society looks like.
I do like the stuff in the fairy city, I think, more than most stuff in this movie.
It's at least a choice, right? And it's I feel like the expected thing would have been to do flowing robes and gowns.
Yeah.
And lots of nature-y stuff. And there is some nature-y stuff, but it's mostly... It almost looks like they just had, like, spacefaring tech underground.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, like, it's sort of like you said, like, Wakanda-y kind of almost.
Yes, their wings are jetpacks.
Right. I mean, although that also, I think... It goes to sort of what you had said, Lee, earlier, where you were like, the wings are jetpacked, but, like, have they always been jetpacks?
It couldn't have always been jetpacks.
Right.
They had to have been real wings at some point, and that's... And I'm instantly fascinated by the...
Did you lose your wings at some point? Like, were they vestigial now?
We evolved past wings, and we had to replace them with tech.
Or maybe it's just a type of fairy, right? Because...
Yeah, I mean, that's true, too.
We know dwarves are a separate kind. If Hong Chao's character was still canon in any way... She didn't appear to have jetpack wings. She had actual wings, and then flies away. Fairy wings.
Yeah.
So maybe she's just the kind of fairy that wasn't born with wings.
Right.
But
no,
also,
that's certainly true.
Most of the cops, except for Foley, seem to be elven fairy type people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're all sort of relatively thin.
The pointy ears.
There's a mixture of, like, medium and small people. Right?
Yeah.
So it's like maybe Judi Dench is some sort of, like, elf, and maybe, like, Holly is some sort of, like, pixie or gnome. I don't know. Or I'm just,
They just pulling out the words.
They don't really differentiate. It seems like there's fairies, and then I guess the dwarves are also technically fairies, but
and there's
dwarves.
Goblins.
Yes.
Too.
Although they do not play much of a role.
No, they don't.
There's a lot of just critters that are unidentified.
Right. There's a lot of weird, like, little, like, Babu Fricks and CGI
there's a
flying
woman
things.
Walking around with a mushroom hat.
Right.
Might be part of her biology. I don't know.
Might just be Toad.
Right. Maybe she is from the Mushroom Kingdom. Well, and then there's trolls,
right?
Isn't that the thing that they kind of, like, shoot
and
into the house?
They seem to lack intelligence.
Right, they're just, like, monstrous beasts, basically.
I kind of have a weird... I probably from the book, and I have some problem with the book, but... I think it's a bit weird that it's like they live in the core. It just seems like a weird, like, traditionally in Irish folklore they live in the mounds, and to suggest that means that they literally live in the ground, and not that the mounds are some sort of gateway to another realm is really strange to me. Why? It just seems to me like, why is there no, like, fairies and elves and all these other creatures are traditionally associated with nature,
right?
But it's just a cave down there. It's a dark cave. It looks cool, but it is a dark cave with nothing but fungal things that are going to grow. Why isn't there any, like, mythical, like, demiplane where it's, like, you know, Feywild-y and...
Literally another
dimension,
realm, just whatever,
I just don't know why we didn't go in that direction for the fairies.
Just also, this is just something that's not addressed in the world building ever. I mean, obviously they keep... Artemis kind of keeps the fairies at bay by being like, "Oh, tell everyone about your existence."
Yeah.
Do they ever say at one point, "Yeah, go ahead, no one will fucking believe you"?
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. No one ever calls his bluff.
Just,
I guess
it's just weird that everyone takes it as rote that would just
everyone
on earth would be credulous,
right.
And then now the gig is up. I'm like, is it though?
I guess he's got proof, but we don't. Like, we never ask for it.
Yeah, and I mean, I do agree that it feels like it's like you have to do a lot of work to, like, make people really believe this sort of shit.
Right, like, if that came out as a picture, someone would have been like,
fake.
It's faked, it's doctored, that's a suit, that's this, that's prosthetics.
So the thing that I was sort of thinking about when I was watching this the second time is how there seem to be, like, rules established, which I think, again, are a thing in the books, but they don't ever really talk about what they are in the movie, because there's a thing whenever... whenever Holly wakes up, Artemis says something like, hey, I welcome you into my house, and now you have to do what I tell you, or some shit
right,
like that.
Those
and whenever
are the
Judy
rules.
Right, and whenever Judy Dench shows up at the door, he says, like, welcome to my house, and she's like, bitch, please, and like shoves her way in. And so it's like, it seems to me that there's some sort of like vampire rule with the fairies where like they can't come into your house right. unless you welcome them, but like mulch diggums can dig up to that. So it's like this, there's like a fairy rule that applies, but just to those fairies and not to dwarves and not to trolls, which can just be thrown in through your door.
It almost in some ways works like a reverse vampire invitation, because they seem to imply that inviting a fairy into your home is what puts them under your
right.
thrall.
Right, yes, that's true. Whereas if you invite Dracula to your home, he can just do whatever the fuck he wants.
And you just, yeah, you just let the wolf
right,
in.
And it's your
I
fault.
Just imagine that Diggum, whatever this fuck, Dig Dug, could just get in there without a problem because he wasn't invited.
Right, I mean, I assume it's just one of those things where, like, he's a dwarf or whatever, so he can get in.
Then what did Judy Dench do
right,
to
I mean,
avoid?
That's the thing. And, like, these are all things that can be very easily explained, but the movie doesn't care to explain any of them, you know?
Later they have Detective Little, or whatever the fuck, Short, whatever mm-hmm. her name is, go, like, I'm breaking every rule in the book doing this. I'm like, I guess, sure, if I guess that's an informed
right.
yeah.
trait.
And there are also things like the time freeze or whatever around his house, which is very confusing, because I agree with, like, Lee, it makes no sense that it freezes everything outside his house, but his house continues as normal.
That's, yeah, okay, because if they can move inside the time freeze anyway.
Right. What's the point?
Freeze the house, go get her, and then come out, and
right.
they don't even know she's gone.
Well,
right.
Then why... I don't understand what's happening when the bubble starts to,
right,
like,
yes, that too. When it starts to break down, and it seems to be, like, throwing people out, but also, like, they disappear sometimes. So, like, are they dying? Are they just being kicked out?
It's almost a way for them to kill them off without it being explicitly
right.
a violent death.
Right, and but then you have, like, things like Judy Dench is, like, yelling, like, you can't save them, like, jump down the hole, Holly Short. It's
right.
like, are they gonna die? Like, it seems like... The fairies are all in danger of dying, but, like, the humans are not in danger of dying because of this.
It,
and also, like, if all this is a drone that you threw over their house, I mean, why don't you just send up another time freeze drone, shoot over the old one, and then you're just fine. Like,
so doesn't it feel like it's forever that it's destabilizing? And
yeah.
there's, like, three different cuts of that centaur guy back in the control room
yeah.
being like,
poor
Foley. It's really, it's
yeah,
really
like,
blown up right
yeah,
now,
like,
guys.
Now it's really bad. Shit's really bad now.
It was a very poor, I think it was meant to be a ticking clock, but
it
was very poor.
It's a very poorly defined ticking clock.
Which is what you want with a ticking clock,
and
right?
I still don't know what happened to those people.
Yeah, they
I
don't
got,
either.
They got time sucked or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
Like, are they dead? Did they just get kicked out and now they're, like, flying free? Like, who's to say?
Let's see the movie from one of their perspectives.
Yes.
They're just hurtling through time.
Yeah. So, lastly, I guess we'll just go briefly into, like, sort of actors and characters. I guess we must start with the titular character, Artemis Fowl himself, Ferdia Shaw, who I think is not good.
No.
And I don't want to be mean to a child.
I have no idea how he is generally. I've literally
yeah.
never seen him in anything else, but he's very bad in this.
Yeah, and I think part of that, again, is the fact that he's a child. I think part of it could also be the fact that he has nothing to play off
yep.
of, because his character has no, like I said, no edges or interesting aspects to him beyond the fact that he is a smart little shit.
I think it's a problem kind of also he's probably inexperienced,
right?
So whereas Judy Dench and Colin Farrell can sell a scene when they might just be looking at, like, a green screen nonsense box or something, he can't.
Yeah.
I also felt like a lot of the times his face would just go completely blank.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just sort of, like, read his lines without, like, much modulation
yeah.
or intonation, and it's just so weird that they never were like, hey, let's take that again, but maybe you try
right.
showing me
the Kenneth was at
anger.
No point like, hey, could you maybe like do a little bit here?
It just feels like a lot of times he's just there, and then like everyone else around him has to carry the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I don't know. I think that you probably were never, even in the best version of this movie with this character, you needed like a good child actor
right.
to like sell the role and make him likable.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always going to be a hard one.
Yeah, I think it's yeah, no matter who, it's going to be a difficult ask for any child
yeah.
actor. Like, you're lucky if you can get a kid who could play something as weird
yeah.
as that character. Holly, any thoughts on Holly? Who I think is a potentially interesting character again,
fine.
But like sort of not done terribly well
yeah.
in this movie.
But at least the actor finds.
I think the actor is fine. It does feel like Saoirse Ronan, as like if you had gone for child Saoirse Ronan, that probably would have been a pretty great choice.
Saoirse Ronan!
The only thing I will comment on briefly is that apparently in the books, Holly is described as having darker skin, so there is some element of vaguely whitewashing her character.
Yeah.
in this movie. They don't explicitly say what she is, just that she has darker skin. So there is that too. Like, they could have gone in a different direction for this and for whatever reason disregarded or was not aware of the fact that that was a thing.
It sucks if so.
It does. Who next?
Josh Gad. I mean, Josh Gad and old lady
Genchi
are doing ridiculous voices.
No, they are. Like, it's
again,
comical.
Maybe not there. I don't know how much of it's natural and how much of it's post. But it's like they're both hidden behind these like ridiculous
outfits, goofy makeup,
yeah,
like bizarre voices.
Do you think they were directed to go big?
I'm sure.
Just because, like, again, our lead is going small.
I think Dench was given like the sort of typical like
gruff cop
yeah. brief. Which again, I think there's like one moment I still really liked where someone's trying to usurp her authority, and there's like guards behind, like the cops
behind
her start to like shoot at her, and she's just like. Like, enough of this. Fuck that. And, like, it's just, like, the equivalent
of she has a very small gesture.
And just, like, she's got her hands in her pocket. She does not remove them from her pockets, but she kind of, like, shrugs her shoulders out a little bit.
And then, like, a shockwave.
Yeah. And a shockwave of magic just knocks all the guys behind
right.
her down, and she's just, like, not even bothered by
it. Right, which is, like, one of those, like, very cool moments that, like, wow, I wish I saw more of this in the movie. Like, I wish I saw more of how powerful this feeble old woman actually is.
Well, and I think, in reality, I think it's a smart way to give your much older actor... a fun action scene.
Right, without having to, like, have them perform
exactly.
action. Right, right.
Yeah. Because, no offense to Judi Dench, but that's probably behind her at
yeah,
this point.
Yeah, right.
So I think it met up really well with where she was at because, I mean, probably the shrug was about as much as she was going to do.
She could
do,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have nothing else to say about Gad, really. Just that, like, Gad, who I think is probably, like, a fine performer all in all, but keeps... being cast in the most obnoxious projects.
He's asked to do these characters that are just not likable.
Right, yeah, no. And
he's got a weird shtick with tunneling and all.
Right, and you see him, like we say, unhinge his jaw, dive into the ground, and start shitting out mud behind
him. His hair is prehensile.
Right, he has prehensile. And also his nose hair. I don't know if you noticed that, but like
no,
some hairs come out of his nose
and
when he's doing that.
There's like this running thing that we don't understand about that he's a dwarf, but he's tall. And
right.
He's so upset about it that he wants Judi Dench to
like magically
make him
tiny.
Short.
Yeah, which is so, like, every time he goes up to a dwarf, he's like, oh, like, us dwarves always got to stick together, right?
Yeah.
They're like, fuck you, you're not a
but
dwarf.
But it's some kind of like Misfit Toys thing where she's like, but you're the best tunneler because you're so big.
Right.
He just wants to be accepted by his people. It's
right.
Like, with this character thread coming out at the 11th hour
right.
of the movie.
When I was watching...
We can't possibly spend any time trying to figure out like what this means.
When I was first seeing him, I was thinking, oh, maybe he's really not a dwarf and that's the reveal.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine he wouldn't have those digging powers.
Right.
He
couldn't like unhinge it. So like, is he a particular species of dwarf? Like, I just wonder, like, if you're going to make this whole shtick about him being like, hey guys, I'm a dwarf. They're like, no, you're not.
She's like, I can't make you small because I need your tunneling. But it's like, we'll just do it after he tunnels.
Right. Yeah. Like, there's not really like, wait till like,
whereas,
I mean, this is always how it is. Like, you wouldn't like give him money before he does the thing. You would make him do the thing and then be
whereas,
like, reward.
To be like, I can't make you small because you idiot. You're not a dwarf.
Right.
You were adopted by dwarves.
Yes.
Did you see did you hear him say as he's like being airlifted out, he like uses what is, I think, supposed to be the like scientific name.
Oh, like Dwarfus Giganticus or some shit like that? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
always a great choice to have more Gad delivering exposition.
Do we
want to
talk really quick about Colin Farrell?
Yes, let's talk really quick about Daddy.
I mean, he looks great. Daddy
looks great.
Daddy,
I mean,
do we
want to
dance
great.
With this Daddy?
Yes. Oh my God, I can't tell you how much
always.
I want to dance with Daddy. I would dance with this Daddy all night long.
Who was Daddy in Nutcracker?
It was Matthew McFadden. Is that his name?
McFadden.
Yeah. Yes. The originals. The OG Sad Daddy. Saddy.
Saddy.
That does need to be like our new thing. Instead of like a Zaddy, it's a Saddy.
It's
a really
Saddy.
Hot Sad Dad.
Even better, Saddies are British Saddies because the Z would become Sad.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I think if you need someone to like look hot and wear a suit,
you really don't
and,
give them a lot to do.
Right, and project gravitas, like you could do much worse than Colin Farrell, obviously.
Yeah.
Even just in resting state, he's giving emotion. And
right.
It was like, it really emphasized...
He just looks so regretful at how bad he is.
Yes. I mean, it is truly just one of those things where it's like, you talk about like actors who just have like a movie star look and a movie star face, like who can just project anything just by virtue of the fact that they have such a great face.
He's
like
so emotive.
Colin Farrell can just show up on screen. You're like, I get it. I got you.
Yeah.
Do we have any other actors? I guess I don't think there's really... the guy who plays Butler, I think, is fine. Like, I got nothing to really say. say about him.
I mean, he just basically is there to have inexplicably bleached blonde hair and blue eye contacts.
He also in the book is Eurasian, apparently, instead of black, which I think is partly why, like, he's described as having, like, really blue eyes.
His name is Domovoy, which sounds Russian.
Right.
I like that actor. I've seen him in
other things. Kenneth Branagh likes him, too, because he was in Cinderella.
Yeah.
He was in... Did he do a Jack Reacher? Is that, like, the action movie?
He sure did.
Yeah, he was in that one also. He was in Game of Thrones.
He was ready for a whole season.
He's a very likable presence, so it's like I don't object to seeing him here.
Yeah,
it is just one of those things where like the character is now significantly older and a different race than you said in
so
the book.
Maybe you don't make his hair blonde and his eyes blue,
right? So maybe don't make him look like a fucking weirdo, and that's also necessitates you having to like make his sister his niece.
It also makes you think that he's like fae or something,
right?
Exactly,
because he does look so like unreal that there's something weird about him,
and it's never explained.
Yeah.
It's like doesn't really make sense that you have that hair color and blue eyes,
and it's like. We know that it's fake. Like, even in... There's no world, unless he's a magical creature.
Right, there's no real world where this could be...
Then this guy bleached his hair.
Yeah, and wears
contact, blue contacts.
Right, chooses to wear blue contacts.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Having covered all of that, I guess, I think we should move into our fixes. Does anyone want to start?
I can start.
Chrissy wants to start?
Mine is very simply explained.
Yeah.
I feel like you can keep a lot of the framing stuff. I think I want to keep Mom. I'm not looking to lose Colin Farrell... But maybe we could have him in a flashback or something, because I always want to dance with Daddy, but he's not necessary, really.
Yeah, I agree.
And I actually think it's more interesting if you start from the point of, Dad's been gone a while, Mom's nuts, I've already kind of started this small but mighty, not strictly legal enterprise.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think everything else can more or less stay the same. There's a book, there's a magic acorn with spells or whatever. That's all fine. We can keep all of that in. What I think needs to happen is you need to make Artemis a little shit that you can't help but love. And I think the direction you need to shove this in is this needed to be Home Alone, but with fairies.
That's interesting.
I wanted him to use his ingenuity, his cleverness. I wanted him to use whatever crazy fae knickknacks Dad left behind and, like, stole. I want him to just, like, fill that house with traps. And I also love the idea that he's maybe doing this to protect his mother, who's maybe not well and is, like, holed up in her room. And then I think what you have is a really propulsive just series of great action comedic scenes.
Yeah.
Fairy tries to come in. Oh, no, this, like, crazo trap that he worked up with this, like, fae item is, like, fucking our shit up. I don't know. I just think that would be so much more fun. I wanted to see the fairies more frustrated by him. And I feel like he would at least then be a character. I think this, like, quest to make him pleasant was bizarre. Because I wouldn't even say that he's, like, very kind. It's not as if they drove him into a nice direction. They just drove him away from being anything.
Right. He's just not interesting now.
So I think it would be much more interesting if... Is he a little obnoxious sometimes? Sure. I think there's a different... You could maybe do the therapist scene again, but with a slightly different tone. I kind of feel like that therapist scene is almost too serious. I would love it, kind of to borrow what you pointed out. If he's like a smirky little kid, that scene takes on a way different tone for me. I think it's a huge mistake to direct that character to be serious. I like this idea that he maybe doesn't understand what this, like, magical object does, but he understands enough to make it work for him, and, like, I like this idea that the fairies are like, who the fuck is this kid that, like, can do all this shit? There should be no time bubble, and I think if you're gonna have the media, like, catch on that something's happening, I think it would just be an interesting element of, like, he's also trying to contain things from getting outside the house so that outside people aren't, like, coming in and fucking up his shit. And I think the last thing I would add is just some kind of normo-human law enforcement person that's after him and is maybe, like, on the side, a good, like, audience surrogate for how weird everything is. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, that's my fix.
I'll go.
Yep.
I think a lot of it's going to be similar. I do think that we kind of all, maybe we're all in agreement, I don't know about you, but the personality revamp required for Miss Fowl just needs to be devious and sneaky and a little conniving and a little shitty. but not all. Like, still a little charming.
Yeah.
And still, like, I think a little like kid-like in the ways that he just is, like, missing something that he doesn't have because of his weird childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to keep some of the basic bones of the plot, but just move things around. So I think that maybe, yeah, there's some MacGuffin. I don't know what it is. It's probably not the Aculos. It's going to make more sense than the Aculos. It's not going to be some sort of mysterious magical object that does too much in everything,
right?
So not much that we can explain. Right.
I actually couldn't remember seeing just seeing what the Aculos was supposed to be.
I mean, they say, but it's just like it's so like whatever they need to. It can open portals.
Yeah.
It's like a source of energy. If they lose it, it's bad news.
It has like all of the spells.
It's a decent mid-sized car.
I think it's probably going to be an object that at least is some sort of half. Symbolic and half actual relic-y ritualistic like symbol of power for like whoever's in charge of fairy town,
right,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Such that it's like we don't use this anymore,
right, but it's just like it's important that we have it.
But there's some old bylaws in place that like if someone does something with this then they could technically take over fairy town if they do the ancient rite over the, you know what I mean? But it's like we don't actually, it's in a museum or something.
I mean, it reminds me so much of the fucking book in Sinbad. You remember like the book, like if they steal the book,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Everything goes south. It's like,
yeah.
Why?
Remember the book in Wish?
I try not to.
So yeah, there's some art, some, you know, MacGuffin or whatever. I think that maybe there's no father that's dead for Holly, but she has a partner, and the partner has gone missing and is presumed to have gone dirty. I think that maybe they were tasked with like guarding the object or like escorting it somewhere or something, and it went missing. And he also went missing at the same time, and everyone's like, sounds like he ratted out. And they suspect that, like, he was working with notorious human thief Artemis Fowl to, like, steal it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the Artemis saw maybe paid him. She's not under investigation or anything, but she's sort of dealing with the fallout of that and is maybe on, like, shit duty until then. And meanwhile, Artemis Fowl's dad also goes missing, and he gets the phone call, like, normal, like, hey, I need this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, oh, I need this thing. And he's like, I don't have this thing. And he finds his dad's notes, and, like, the notes reference the partner and all the stuff about fairies being real. And I think the partner leads Artemis Fowl Jr. to Holly, and somehow he finds a way to, like, I want to get away from, like, a fairy SWAT team arrives and, like, raids the mansion.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I just don't see how you lose that fight. I don't care how smart this 12-year-old is.
Yeah.
I think once that happens, you're fucked. So I think instead he just manages to sort of low-key get Holly. And, like, it starts in the situation where, like, Artemis maybe thinks that, like, there's, like, a double backstab thing where, like, Artemis thinks that, like, Holly may have killed his dad or responsible for taking his dad. And Holly obviously thinks that, like, Artemis's dad did something to her partner because she doesn't believe her partner was evil or bad. And it does turn out that, like, instead of, like, this weird Opal Cowboy shit, what her partner did know that it uncovered, like, some sort of deep-seated, multi-layered corruption within Leprechaun, such that if the artifact had been, like, left in their care, like, it just would not have been safe. There's, like, this planned coup that would have taken place. And maybe Jadinja's character was safe, but it's, like, everyone around her, there's enough people around her that are compromised that it's just, like, there was no time to, like, really do anything about it. So it was just not safe to report it to her superiors because he didn't know who to trust.
Right.
So he instead worked with Artemis, who he knew was, like, really good at secreting stuff away, to keep it hidden while he figured it out, but maybe died or went missing in the interim or something. He was not around to do it. But yeah, I want to have it more about, like, the police. There's, like, rather than it being some mysterious road figure, I think that Holly finds out that the police force is just, like, there's some sort of old corruption. And it could maybe date back to, like, some schism in the fairy community or some other power dynamic thing that we can cover in the movie. But it's just, like, a much more complicated strife than just, like, one evil villain wants to take over Fairyland and rule over mortals. It's just, like, the police force is corrupt.
Right.
Right.
Right. There's, like, a much bigger issue at play than just, like, this one guy.
Yeah. And, like, your partner wasn't fine, and Artemis's dad wasn't a huge asshole in this particular case.
Yeah.
But he did actually steal all this stuff from real museums. So maybe, but, like, you know. So, yeah. Just, like, sort of simplify it a bit like that. And that's what I would do.
I mean, for me, I know, like, the easiest solution is to say, like, just do the book, but, like, maybe you should just do the book for something like this. It does feel like, again, one of those issues that I was talking about earlier, where when you start to deviate wildly from the things that people found interesting about this book in the first place, it just becomes an issue of, like, well, why are you doing it? And then you do it so blandly that even audiences don't care. care, and you just sort of shot yourself in the foot by trying to make this appeal to everyone. So I think, like, the two things I want to say is I agree that there should be some minor softening of Artemis as a character, which I do think you kind of can get at the end, where he reveals he was doing this partly for the purposes of helping his mother, mm-hmm. versus just, I want money. And, like, he can sort of be like, but also the money is pretty good too, right? Like, I think, like, you can sort of pull something like that, where it's like, you see that he has a little bit of a heart, but he is still kind of like a little bit of a shit, which I think is kind of what this character needs. And so there are any number of ways that you can do something like that throughout the movie and, like, seed it throughout to show that, yes, this character does care about people. He does have people that he loves. I think he probably cares about Butler an awful lot, mm-hmm. because he was crying when he was dying, whereas Juliet was, like, I don't know, on a lighthouse again or some shit. So you just sort of have things like that. I think if you maybe, like, establish his closeness with Butler early on too, that probably helps. I think the other thing that I would kind of think is maybe the issue is that you need the point of view character to kind of be Holly for the first movie. Maybe you don't even get a whole lot into Artemis until toward the end of Act One. Like, maybe all of the first part is just sort of following Holly as she's sort of, like, going about her day-to-day shit, and then she, you know, she gets called up to Earth to deal with this troll, and then she has to go to this tree to plant an acorn or whatever shit it is she has to do to replenish her magic. Then all of a sudden this little shit shows up with a stun gun and is like, got you. And then maybe you can do, like, a little bit of a flashback to be like, who the fuck is this kid or something, yeah. like that. And so I think if you're first of all going through Holly's perspective, you kind of have the entry character of like, oh, this is a good, likable character that we as a dumb audience will enjoy having. But then you can also sort of gradually work on softening Artemis as a character throughout. So by the time you theoretically get to do a second movie or something like this, you can have Artemis and Holly on kind of more equal standing, where they're both sort of your main characters, and you already know that Artemis has a heart behind his icy little 12-year-old exterior. So that's kind of just my thought there briefly, that maybe if they had sort of reconceived how they wanted to go into this world, it might have given them a stronger chance at making Artemis a character who would appeal to, I don't know, moms in minivans or some shit. What do I know?
I like it.
So I guess to go into it, would you recommend this movie?
No.
Probably not.
No. I think this is a fascinating example of a movie like being so wildly re-edited in post that it's almost interesting to look at from that perspective. Honestly, the first time I saw this, I was like, well, this is just like a dumb adaptation, sort of didn't know what to do with itself. But then watching it this time and like looking into what all happened behind the scenes or what people theorize happened behind the scenes, then I was like, oh, there's something interesting here. So like, I'm not saying the movie is good, it's not, but this is a really fascinating example of how wildly you can fuck up a movie because everyone around you is panicking about what to do with, yeah. it. So like, if nothing else, it's that. Again, I still can't recommend you watch it, and frankly it's not on Disney Plus, so you can't easily watch it anymore. You'd have to like rent it at this point, and there's no real reason to do that. Don't bother.
Yeah.
Giraffepack.com is the website. Facebook.com/whitewashpodcast is our Facebook page. You know, like we said, we're on all the typical podcast apps, so follow, subscribe, rate, review, what have you there. We will be back in 2 weeks with a mini episode. Until then, let's buy it out in our gruffest, awfulest fairy voices.
Bye. God.